DW Africa Link. Ghana has enjoyed relative peace and calm for decades compared to neighboring countries like Burkina Faso and Togo, who have been experiencing constant jihadist attacks. There are concerns, however, that Ghana may be at risk of losing that peace. A recent Reuters news agency report claimed that Islamist militants are discreetly using Ghana's north as a logistical and medical base to sustain their insurgency. The Ghana government has refuted those claims. So what really is the situation in Ghana? How safe is the country as jihadist extremism grows in bordering states? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Ghana has positioned itself as Africa's democratic city on the hill, with relative peace and calm and regular constitutional changes of government through largely free and fair elections. And yet, the West Africa Center for Counter-Extremism has been warning that violent extremist groups could exploit the increasing ethnic tensions in northern Ghana for terrorist violence. There is even more concern as Ghana heads to the polls later this year for its general elections. Now, we need to get a better understanding of the threat that extremist groups pose for Ghana and indeed the rest of the continent. Let's get more from Mutaru Mumuni Mukta, security analyst and executive director of the West Africa Center for Counter-Extremism. I also have DW correspondent in the Sahel region, Bram Postumus. Hello, guys. Welcome to the program. Mutaru, you've been keenly following this. It's not the first time we've heard about northern Ghana being used by jihadists as a logistical and medical base to sustain their insurgency. In fact, it's not the first time we've heard of any link between northern Ghana and insurgency activities, right? The government has officially rejected it, but is there any cause for concern?
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on this program. Yes, this is a concern for all of us who work in this space. And it's a concern because we're seeing the threat change in ways that feels that it can overwhelm state security actors along the Gulf of Guinea. If you go back, say, 8-10 years ago, the threat of violent extremism was expanding in the Sahel and specifically moving towards coastal states. And so we saw, for the first time, away from traditional Sahelian region of Mali and part of Niger, Chad, we saw attacks beginning to happen in mainland Burkina Faso, as well as in Cote d'Ivoire. Our analysis subsequently indicated that it was intended to involve Ghana, Benin, and Togo after Burkina Faso and Cote d'Ivoire. For some reasons, it got, stopped in Cote d'Ivoire. Ever since, we've seen the expansion of terrorism from the Sahel towards coastal states. And in the last 6-7 years, we've seen Burkina Faso emerging as the epicenter of the terrorist violence in the Sahel. In the last 3 years, we have seen the attacks move further towards the coastal states, specifically Ghana from Burkina Faso. And we are beginning to see some attacks that are closer to the border, the northern border of Ghana. And these incidences have led to escalation of security measures and non-state security measures against the possible spillover onto Ghana. So to the extent that we're seeing official reports, when I say official report, Reuters news agency, indicating that the threat to suggest that they appear to be the crossover of terrorists into northern parts of the country, and there appears to be a situation where they are seeking medical care and using Ghana as a logistical hub to organize and to go back into the theater of violence. This is not entirely new. Those of us who work in this space know that the reality of some of these elements coming into northern borders, it's a fact. It is a reality because it becomes possible because if you look at the porous nature of the borders, it's quite a long, border. And we have very limited men, at the official entry points. And that allows these individuals coming in and out.
Just to be clear, as things stand officially, the Ghanaian government has rejected this report, you know, by Reuters suggesting that northern Ghana was being used by jihadists as a logistical and medical base to sustain their insurgency. So obviously, officially on that front, Ghana says that's not the case. But what you're saying is that it is not unthinkable to think that based on how porous that side of Ghana's border is, that jihadists could enter and cause havoc, right?
Yeah. So what we have on the ground from our work is that there have been commentary among locals in the areas that indicates that these individuals may have come in here for purposes of buying provisions, logistics, things they need, just regular things people need on a daily basis, as well as some of those who, you know, could come here for medical care in the northern parts of the country. And it is not a far-fetched reality because there are people who are cut across the border from the same ethnic backgrounds, familial ties between them. It has always been a reality, a feature of cross-border relations. And so it's not a far-fetched reality that these things are happening. The aspect of the report that worries many, including government, is the part that seeks to suggest that there is some kind of pact of non-aggression posture between the state and the terrorists in the region. And that is a part that, you know, it's seen as a conjecture by many analysts here. And so it is a part that worries government, and clearly it makes it difficult to accept wholly the report that has been issued. There isn't any kind of pact that we know of between the state and the terrorists in the region.
Right. Okay. That's a very good laid down foundation. So what we're saying is there's enough grounds based on your analysis to believe that this jihadist or extremist groups somehow managed to get into Ghana through the north. But what you're kind of disproving is that that sort of pact that the report is trying to suggest, that the government of Ghana and these jihadists have some sort of agreement, that is what you're trying, you believe is not the case. But let me come to you, Bram, because you've also been, you've been covering this topic. We've been talking to you all the time about, you know, extremist groups, jihadists, insurgencies, and all of that. Tell me what you make of this. Where do you see Ghana in this picture when we talk about growing jihadism?
Well, first of all, many thanks to the first speaker for this very, very clear and concise setting of the scene, and also confirming what I've always been saying for a very long time, that it is inconceivable that when you have Côte d'Ivoire, Togo, and Benin being affected by jihadist insurgents coming in through the very porous border and unprotected border largely with Burkina Faso. I'll come to that in a minute. It is inconceivable that Ghana somehow is in such a special position that it will be spared this problem. And again, especially given the fact that culturally, family ties, with family ties, linguistically, the border between Ghana and Burkina Faso basically is pretty much non-existent. People speak the same language. There are family ties back and forth. So the idea that Ghana is somehow different from all the others that have been affected by these insurgents is rather difficult to defend, shall we say. And the problem that all these four countries share, and they respond to it in different ways, is the fact that on the other side, Burkina Faso, it has a military junta which is currently fighting for its life, because the tensions both inside the army and between the army and various fringes of the population are mounting. One of the reasons for this is obviously that the security situation is extremely bad. And so this means that if you see the reports coming out of Benin, Togo, and Côte d'Ivoire, where they do acknowledge that there is a problem, that they complain about the fact that the Burkinabe army on the other side of the border is absent. Mm. There is hardly any protection going on. So they have decided, well, if that's the case, we have to do far more to protect our own borders. And the handicap you have here in terms of government responses is not only the fact that the borders are rather fictitious, certainly in the minds of the people who live there. And secondly, a lot of these border areas are occupied by national parks, which was a very nice idea from the point of view of protecting wildlife and attracting tourism and all the rest of it. And for an insurgent group, an armed insurgent group, it is ideal because it's empty, it's largely unprotected. The border doesn't exist. You can go back and forth at will, and nobody sees you. So that's the place where you set up base. And this is what's been happening across this large area of borderlands between Burkina Faso and the four countries we are basically talking about, so Ghana, Benin, Cote d'Ivoire, and Togo.
Let me come to you, Mutaru, because we're making Ghana the center of all of this now, because in my years of reporting, one can argue that Ghana has been overall spared by jihadists, right? I mean, if you look at what's been going on in these neighboring countries that we talked about, including Burkina Faso, it's been quite fierce, but that's not really been the situation in Ghana. Why, if you agree with me, would you say Ghana has overall enjoyed relative peace and calm?
Thank you to the previous speaker. And he's laid very, very brilliant points about the differences or the similarities between our northern part of the country and the other countries surrounding Ghana. There's a report that we released as an organization a couple of years ago titled Ghana's Exposure to Violent Extremism. And in that report, we highlighted the factors that indicates that Ghana's security situation is becoming more and more vulnerable to extremist exploitation. And we listed several factors. If you look at the fact that Ghana in the last 3.5 decades has been spared any large-scale conflict or violent or war situation, it builds a sense of resilience, a sense of, you know, belief that it's a very cohesive society. And this has allowed for some institutional structures intended to address existing conflicts. And so comparatively, it appears that Ghana has some sort of institutional structures and social factors that make it relatively better. If we look at other things in terms of vulnerabilities, we're looking at governance issues, governance challenges and deficits in terms of good governance. We're looking at social factors, marginalization that is present across the region, not just any country. So this sort of, you know, factors can easily be exploited by extremist groups. And they have done that in many parts, including Burkina Faso in particular, and Mali. And so if you're looking at why Ghana has not been attacked, it includes several factors. The fact that I talk about these issues of governance and institutions and social factors, civil society and the media in a way that allows people to address issues, at least, or speak to issues. The cross-border relations, there's some elements of resilience in it, and then some elements of risk and vulnerabilities involved. The local communities across the borders, they are ethnic groups that cut across the border. And so in terms of building alliances and building networks in terms of extremist, you know, violence, it should be, I mean, it should be something to be expected. But if you look at the profile of the terrorists or extremist groups in Burkina Faso, a lot of those come from the northern and northeastern part of Burkina Faso, who may not and does not, they do not necessarily speak the language of northern parts of the country. Right. If you look at the English language is exclusively the case in Ghana compared to Burkina Faso, Cote d'Ivoire, Benin, and Togo. And so that kind of language limitation limits the capacity of these extremists to easily form alliances with individuals within the country. I mean, in the interest of time, I just summarize to say that there are several factors that indicates that Ghana should have been attacked if you look at the vulnerabilities that we share with the other countries. But at the same time, we look at other factors that seem to make us more resilient. And so in our general analysis, our thinking is that Ghana is waiting to be attacked. It is just a matter of time. The town called Boko, Boko has been at the tip of the border with Burkina Faso. And this has been a sustained environment for ethnic conflict that spans over 70 years. And in the last 3 years, it has become more violent. Just a couple of days ago, there have been attacks and killings. Over 16 individuals have been killed in the last couple of days. And so this sort of vulnerabilities create anxiety and the potential that extremist groups could exploit the vulnerabilities in northern Ghana.
Right. So, Bram, let me come to you because it is challenging to hear that Ghana is waiting to be attacked. Obviously, that's not what the government would want to happen. So what needs to be done to prevent that from happening?
Well, I think it's no coincidence that, Ghana and neighboring Cote d'Ivoire, who also share many, many other things, you know, both economically and even linguistically, even though there is, of course, a great difference in the colonial language that's being spoken, French in Cote d'Ivoire, English in Ghana, but they have also a lot of things in common. And one of the things that you could look at is the way the Ivorian government has been dealing with the jihadist problem in the north, also coming from Burkina Faso. You know that in 2016, there was a major attack at the seaside resort of Grand Bassam on the beach. Those assailants came from Mali, have been traced, and some of them have been arrested. I was there when that happened. In the case of the northern area in Cote d'Ivoire, there is a similarity with Ghana to the extent that the attacks so far have been rather limited. But as Wilfred very, very pointedly points out, the key issue is exploiting locally existing differences. The insurgents, the jihadist insurgents, are extremely good at reading the room. Who is where, who's doing what, and how can we exploit this with the aim of either creating more discord and violence and destabilizing that particular region? They've been doing that in Togo and Benin as well. Or settling, setting up shop basically, and using that particular region for provisions, for logistical reasons, and all the rest of it. It seems to me that the Ivorian government has taken a more holistic approach, not by denying the problem exists, because that's not going to help you, but by going into the area and, first of all, build trust with the communities affected. That is absolutely vital if you want to get rid of this problem or contain it. The previous speaker used the word marginalization, and I keep going back to this point. That is the absolute key. It comes from the violence occurs in areas and in regions and in communities that have been marginalized and have no prospects beyond immediate survival. And this is something that they have in common. So that's the first thing. Rebuilding trust. Communities need to have trust in the state and have to regard the state and its representatives as people who come to help you and not people who come to rob you, because the state is very often regarded as predatory. So that's one. And second, there is, of course, a real existing problem of insurgent violence. There are two ways to look at it. You can look at it in terms of war. In terms of war, you can look at it as a problem that has to be solved militarily. You can also look at it as a law and order problem. These are criminals. They steal, they loot, they kill, they commit acts of violence. And so, instead of sending in the army and quite possibly exacerbating the problem, as we have seen in many parts of the Sahel, you send in the police and have them arrested because these are lawbreakers. It redefines the problem and it brings it into a framework that people can understand. And again, people understand that they have to be protected from lawbreakers. This takes the sting out of the protection rackets that these insurgents run. So there are various elements that you can do to contain that particular problem. And it seems to me that the Ivorian government is getting a couple of things right, because as Wilfred points out, the violence has stopped, it has diminished, the danger hasn't gone away, because again, we have a junta in Burkina Faso that is not serious about containing the problem and protecting its borders. But at least there seems to be a kind of a pause in the violence, and it is always interesting to find out how they have done this. And I think this is how they've done it. Build trust, make sure that the violence is contained, and bring development.
Right. Mutaru, so is there any sign that Ghana is doing anything to prevent marginalization and prevent the broadening of jihadist activities in the country?
Well, usually security measures is often a function of the threat perception. And so your perception of the threat would lead you to certain measures. So for instance, in Ghana, when the attacks began to happen, within coastal states, and as the previous speaker noted, the first attacks in 2016, Grand Bassam, and a month apart, one in Burkina Faso, the Ghanaian authorities, even at that point, saw or viewed the threat from external sources. And up till this point, a significant measure of the focus has been on, the border communities, because the threat is viewed largely from external sources. We are beginning to emphasize the the reality of the threat even within internal sources. And that points to the issue of marginalization, marginalization right. along ethnic lines, marginalization along various lines, including political lines, including other demographic lines. This is a big, big factor in the Sahel. The fact that some communities described as minority groups have been significantly marginalized to the extent that it is a powerful tool for exploitation by terrorist groups in the region. And so if you look at Jenin, for instance, it is significantly dominated by some ethnic groups because they are significantly marginalized within the local space. And so they are pushed to join these groups in order to engage in revenge attacks against the state and against the local population.
What is Ghana doing to prevent that
Ghana currently is working with civil society, but largely funded by some external partners to build resilience in communities along, you know, communities that are affected by marginalization. And the single biggest victim is the Fulbe or Fulani community in northern Ghana in particular. And so they are building and creating dialogue sessions, education and awareness creation platforms that allow them to engage and to understand the threat that we are looking at, and also the points or factors involved in the marginalizing or discriminatory practices. And this is the single biggest factor in my analysis that can significantly impact on whether terrorism could happen sooner or later.
Hopefully never. I have enjoyed this discussion. A lot of deep insights shared by you guys. Mutaru Mumuni Mukta, security analyst and executive director of the West Africa Center for Counter-Extremism, also DW correspondent in the Sahel region, Brown Postmus. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time.
We appreciate that. Thank you, too.
Clearly, Ghana has much to do if it wants to maintain the relative peace and calm it has enjoyed for decades. Because the threat of jihadist expansion is real, and some West African countries are paying the price for it. Let's get more from Alex Vines, Africa Director, Chatham House. Hello, Alex. Thanks a lot for your time. So we're talking about jihadism or extremist groups creeping into West Africa, right? So how widespread has extremism become, first of all, on the West African side of the continent?
Well, it is the epicenter for extremism in the world, violent extremism. If you look at the Sahelian countries, it is the epicenter of terrorism that is expedited by extremist groups globally. And there is now spillover from the landlocked Sahelian states into the northern borders of coastal states. So that there are incidents in Benin, in Togo, in Ghana. And a number of other coastal states are trying to improve their strategies of combating violent extremism because they're concerned about that this could spread further. So it is a alarming situation in West Africa, and there's no room for complacency.
Definitely no room for complacency. And then you touched on Ghana, which is the overall focus of this podcast. There's always been the discussion about how Ghana has been spared, so to speak, from extremism, and now we're talking about slowly it creeping into Ghana through the north. So how did jihadist violence happen in Benin and Togo, and how does it compare to how it's slowly seemingly happening in Ghana?
Well, the evidence in Ghana is that it's being used as a rest and recreation area for you know, violent extremists from Burkina Faso in particular. So that they relax there, they go shopping, they may take some medical treatment. And there have been allegations that in Ghana, the authorities there are turning a blind eye. There's a kind of informal understanding that as long as they don't conduct violent activities on Ghanaian soil, that they will be monitored, but they won't be necessarily fully disrupted. That's very different in Togo and Benin, where there have been active operations against violent extremists. And there have been armed clashes, and there have been some deaths. The concern in both Togo and Benin is that the northern borders also are more sparsely populated. They can be used as safe havens by extremist groups. What is happening is that the coastal states, all of them, Ghana included, are looking at how they can improve intelligence gathering, intelligence sharing, and what are the best international practices for combating violent extremism. Best way to prevent violence is to kind of prevent it And so that's about development also. There are not pure security solutions to this challenge. It is at heart fundamentally also about development and, and human security.
Right. To be honest, it sounds a bit disturbing. And if I got you correctly, you're saying that the difference in the Ghana situation is that the violent activities are not actually happening on the ground, but somehow parts of Ghana have become a safe haven for these jihadist groups to prepare their next attack to another country. Did I get you right like that?
So it's not. So the allegation is that right in the north of Ghana, jihadists will cross over from Burkina Faso to kind of resupply, relax, but not conduct activities in Ghana. The Ghanaian government has denied this is the case. They say they're very active in pursuing any violent extremists that are on Ghanaian soil. But that is the allegation. And there have been a number of missions into Ghana looking to see if there's any veracity of this. So the military security is only a part of this pathway to successfully combating violent extremism.
Right. Alex Vines, Africa Director, Chatham House. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Jihadist groups are spreading southwards from the central Sahel, threatening coastal West African nations like Benin, Ivory Coast, Ghana, and Togo. This further highlights the increasing risk of spillover from the Sahel. That's it from this edition of Africa Link. Join the conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. Click follow so you don't miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Josie Mahachi. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.